You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking to Ruben Ortiz Torres. Ruben, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, hi. Thank you for calling me.
So, Ruben, I want to talk about your work and what you're doing. I know you're in some planning stages now for the next piece, but just before the interview, we were starting to talk about your first visit to New Haven and how that was instrumental or influential in your other work. So it sounds like a good way to begin. Can you tell me a little bit about that trip to New Haven that you took and why that affected your work and in what way?
Yeah. I'll talk to you about it. Yes, I went to New Haven because I was invited by Yale's. And Jay is he's not a historian. He studied there art history, and he's also a critic and a curator now. Interestingly enough, we sort of went in different directions. We crossed the border in different ways. He was on his way from the East Coast to Mexico City, and I was coming from Mexico City to Los Angeles, right, to California. Yeah, he's an expert in Mexican art, actually. He wrote probably the most widely used book of Mexican art nowadays in the United States. And he had, at the time, he had curated a show that, as I recall, it was called something like South of the Border or something like that. And it was about all these souvenirs, right, that tourists would collect and all these objects that you would find around the border, like, you know, these kind of campy, kitschy objects that would represent Mexico, I guess what would be called Mexican curios. And so it's interesting to me because I, later on here in California, I've also, a few years ago for the Pacific Standard Time Initiative that was sponsored by the Getty, I worked on a show that had to do with the relationship between Los Angeles and Mexico, and I had to revisit a lot of some of those representations and narratives. And Jay and I, well, became good friends, and it's interesting to me that, you know, we represent these two different routes of migration, I suppose.
Right. And so let's walk through that show a little bit, that show that you did prepare that you were just discussing. Can you tell me a little bit about how that show turned out? What was the viewer experiencing in that show?
Yeah, the show that I worked on, the show that I curated, that it was called Mexele, Mexican Modernism in Los Angeles from 1930s to 1980 something, and you know, originally I was invited to do a show about Mexican artists in Los Angeles, in Southern California. But the reality is that's something very difficult to define because as you know, California, you know, was part of Mexico at some point, and also you know, so there's artists that have come from Mexico. There's also artists that somehow, I mean, like Mexican-American artists that have done work related to Mexico, but also American artists that most artists here have done work either in Mexico or about Mexico or related to that. So the show became about all those relations, actually. It became about that sort of complicated relation. And I think the show did so good in a way. I mean, had good reviews. That led to this other bigger and more recent initiative that was also Pacific Standard Time, that was organized, that just happened recently, last year. It was called Pacific Standard Time LALA, which actually comes, that title comes from my essay that I wrote in that show, trying to figure if LA stands for Los Angeles or Latin America, because it stands for both. And so the Getty used that word game for this new initiative that they did recently that had to do with Latin American art in general. So, And I also curate another show for this other. And not just curate. I also have participated as an artist in several group shows, had a solo show, but also curated another show and came with a couple of books. So it was actually very busy, a very busy time.
It sounds like a busy time, and you're still busy, right? What is it that you're working on at the moment? I know you're preparing for something, but can you tell me a little bit about your current activity?
Yeah, well, my current activity is like for trying to digest everything that happened last year. But I'm supposed to be having a big exhibition that would travel. And we'll start in Mexico City in the University Museum of Contemporary Art, and eventually will come to be presented at the San Diego Museum of Contemporary Art. And it's kind of, I mean, it's a service show, but kind of a retrospective that will include different bodies of work that I have produced. And also, in the meantime, I'm also working and exploring. In the university, I've been doing research. We have this fabrication facility that where I have a spray booth, and so I've been using car painting to do this series of paintings that I've been working on. That sort of refers to, on one hand, to I guess car culture and street culture, but also is using a lot of new materials that are also interactive. That they respond to the touch or
like what? Tell me more about that. I mean, that's so interesting as a medium, car painting. So that's something you need a booth for, a special arena. And isn't it, it's pretty toxic material too, isn't it?
Yeah, although it is pretty toxic, but it's also it's evolving. Like, you know, now, especially here in California, there's some strict rules in terms of the because also the material is very polluting, but now there's car paint that it's water based, so it's actually less toxic. But yes, these are industrial materials, right? So as opposed to usually the art materials that artists use, these materials are designed to dry faster and even, and obviously they are designed to be mass produced and also to have certain kind of they are resistant, of course, because they are meant to be outdoors. But we use them a lot because I can use these materials with there's a lot of new materials that do all sorts of things. As I said, that they're interactive. They refract light.
But what do you mean by interactive? Right. Yeah, because that's so interesting. I'm interested to hear in the kind of new properties these kind of materials have. So you're using not acrylic car paint. You're using something else?
Yeah, well, usually we use urethane. There's thermochromic painting that actually reacts to different changes with different temperature changes. Hmm. You know, the temperature actually makes the pigment invisible, for example. And also, there's this other material that is called chromalucent paint that, when you move, it refracts a different color. So,
right, I've seen some of that. I haven't seen the other two. And these are both the application for both of these traditionally has been on cars. These are developed for the automotive industry.
Yeah, well, this is I actually met the guy that developed the chromalucent paint. And his idea is that this material would have some scientific uses, and actually, I think some of this material actually it has even been used on dollar bills. I mean, I guess the new dollar bills, like you can see that they.
Oh right. Special techniques that can't be reproduced.
Yeah. But a lot of these materials, to be honest with you, when they appear and they are novelties, and nobody knows what to use them for, actually, car customizers immediately use them. I mean, they are always looking for any new thing that comes out. So it's one of the first uses that a lot of these materials have. And I guess now, as well as artists like me that try to play with these things and experiment.
And then so let's just talk a little bit about the painting that actually comes out of these. How do you develop that? Or what kind of surfaces do these go on, and how do you create the content for the painting?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, depends on each. I try to think of the particular properties of each of these materials. I try to use them in relation to a particular content for a particular piece. But in general, I should say that that, for example, like our paint, like I usually use them in panel. I use it in panels, for example, in aluminum panels, which are smooth and flat and it's easy. I mean, they're light, and you know, and I use them, right? But sometimes I use, depending on the materials. For example, if some of the materials that the ones that I used to respond to different temperature changes or to the touch, I usually paint them in foams because the foam retains more the heat than the aluminum. The aluminum dissipates it. So if I want to dissipate the heat, then I would use the aluminum. But if I want to retain it, I would use the foam.
And are you spraying, or this is how is it applied?
We usually spray them. Yeah, although I've been doing different like combinations of different things. I mean, sometimes I like, for example, I've been also playing with. I don't really do pinstriping. But because it's actually very difficult, but I use those brushes actually to draw to apply it in a more conventional way. But I also spray and also I a lot of the flakes and the powder, because there's a lot of the flakes and there's a lot of powders too. And sometimes I've been making these sort of more, I suppose, expressionist or my versions of action paintings, I guess, where I throw them. I mean, I have to design containers to, or I use, for example, like, well, I guess these things that are like salt shakers, I guess, or like, you know, things that they would use in a restaurant to throw certain ingredients. Well, I use them to, because I have to paint that, to use them fast, because these materials dry fast.
Right. Oh, that's so interesting. Well, I'm glad you talked about that, because it is kind of fascinating to get into those materials a little bit, which are so unusual. So I know now you're preparing for something, right? You said before we begin recording, you said you were in a kind of development stage of fundraising for a new project.
Yeah, well, as I was telling you, I had these shows, luckily, I mean, some of the pieces, actually, I was able to move them and to sell some of them, and I'm in the process of starting to invest, because it's always this cycle where, like, you know, I invest and then we do these shows and then I try to figure out the economy of the next project or the next show. But we have different ideas for different projects that have to do with the sculptures and paintings that use these materials. Also, in the last show, I did these pieces where I customized some shopping carts. So I actually made like a lowrider shopping cart that hops and dances and bounces. But I'm in the process of.
I love it. And when you made that shopping cart, so just to talk about that shopping cart before, what you're in the process of, was that a collaboration that you did with somebody else? Because you're always talking to me. Are they always collaborative, or you're the architect of all this, right? The artist of all this.
Yeah, well, I design some of these things, I've been working actually with a lowrider whose name is Salvador Muñoz. He actually used to customize he customized this pickup truck that then later on we use in an installation and a movie and turn it into this, I suppose, this. It was featured in an art piece, and I still work with him. He's really good, actually, at doing hydraulics. Now, actually, the new piece we did, the shopping cart, that doesn't use hydraulics; it uses these airbags.
And you're talking about, of course, the low rider, which is the classic car that moves up and down, and all the shocks and everything are moving in it, right? Or are able to?
Yes. Although the version, what he did, I mean, because the classic cars are like, it's like the classic cars are like these Impalas, right, that have hydraulics that make them hop or that lower them and, I mean, raise the car and then lower the car. But Salvador made a very extreme version of that. He made this pickup truck that had like 16 hydraulic kits. And that car totally, I mean, it was the first transformer that was ever made. Like it really, the shape of the truck totally mutated. Like, you know, became this abstract sculpture where, with moving parts, the doors like exploded and spinned, and the hood of the hood also like when I pop up and spin, the bed of the truck like spliced in four parts and spinned around, and then the front separated from the bed. It was totally crazy. I mean, you have to
wow.
There's no description, really. I mean, you'll have to see this thing. And we've done some. I mean, we've done other machines that also, for example, we did a scissor lift that also spliced and separated. And
so you. So he's obviously the master at building these things, and together you're designing them.
Yes, he is. He is. He's definitely. Of course, he used to compete in the lowrider shows. The pickup truck that I'm telling you about, I mean, won like 5 years in a row. But it was difficult for him to economically sustain that. And so we've been trying to. I mean, we make sculptures, and we make, for example, the scissor lift. It is one of these machines, but it's a machine that was conceptualized to do those things inside a museum, right? Because museums have scissor lifts. They use scissor lifts actually to
put in change bulbs,
yeah,
and hang things very high, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge mechanical lift, yeah.
To hang the work and do those things. But at the same time, these are the machines that are used by the preparators. So by customizing this scissor lift and turning it into a sculpture, also we made a piece that also reveals the labor that happens within the museum, right? Because this is the tool that the workers use in the museum. And in a way, it's an art piece that is for them, right? Because it's for them to play and to use. But it's also a sculpture and an art piece in its own way, yes.
Right. And so you were about to tell me before I got you sidetracked on talking about these objects, which are wonderful, what you're preparing to do, because you have to raise a budget for the next project.
Sure. No, yes. And we are trying to – I'm trying to think – I mean, we – I mean, I have obviously different ideas. I tend to have a lot of ideas. So right now we're trying to figure out the what's the next step, right? Like what would be the best, which of these ideas would work in a particular opportunity. And so I've been invited to different shows, and I'm trying to figure out which things could be done in which of these places, and if we have a match, and then go ahead and develop it, yes.
So is there anything about, that makes sense. Obviously, there's a big budget in a lot of these things. They're costly to produce. Can you speak a little bit about how money's raised? I mean, is this all just coming out of your pocket, or are there also patrons or sponsors that also help to produce some of these projects?
Yeah, well, it sort of varies. I mean, to be honest with you, it varies. Sometimes there are certain opportunities where there's some fun. Like, for example, I don't know, I was invited to do a show in a museum in Cuernavaca in Mexico, and that museum was where this muralist, Cicados, used to make his murals. And actually, he used to use car paint. So, for example, if I got some funding to produce some work that would relate to some of the ways he used to produce, but it varies, and needless to say that if I fund the project, then I have more freedom, right? And then we can do things more the way we would like to. But of course, It's also difficult because some of these, it's a whole lot of healing ways, you know, because you make these things and then they need maintenance and for example, the shopping cart, that's a small version. I mean, that's a smaller thing that actually, and it's actually very sturdy and doesn't need a lot of maintenance. So, for example, that's a piece that could easily be collected. But other pieces, like that big truck, I mean, it's still alive because this collector, Tom Patchett, has been able to support it, but otherwise it wouldn't even exist. But it requires maintenance, right? And
right.
We recently showed it at this exhibition in Riverside in the UC Arts Block. It was included in a show of futurisms in relation to the Pacific Standard Time Initiative called Mundos Alternos. I guess it varies, and you know, the shopping carts, I funded them and I invested on them. Depends on the project. They could be expensive if it's something really large, but at the same time, you know, everything is expensive now. I mean, to make any sculpture, I mean, if I would make an exhibition of photographs, and I have 40 photographs, and I have to frame them, I'm going to end up spending, you know, if it's $200 a frame, and you have, you know, so I'm going to end up spending thousands of dollars. So if an exhibition of paintings or an exhibition of photographs might actually end up costing as much as one of these objects, right, of an exhibition of these objects. So... I don't know. I try to. Of course, I have to attend the realities of I need to invest money to be able to make it. And of course, I have a budget, and my budget is not as the budgets of some artists that actually have a lot of resources.
Right.
But we still manage to do something. I mean, yeah.
Well, that's good, yeah, because I think that is a struggle for all artists, you know, filmmakers, installation artists, all kinds of people who are trying to develop projects and need to create a budget. And as you were saying, that's such a good point. If the money's coming from yourself, of course, it's you can do whatever you want. Whereas you're saying in some cases, like if the money comes from an institution, that it's that there's some strings attached to some degree, or it somehow affects your creative.
The strings are come in all sorts of ways. I mean, it's not necessarily. I mean, sometimes there are institutions that support you and allow you to do what you want. I mean, like for example, the scissor lift that we did was actually supported by the fabric workshop in Philadelphia. But for example, I mean, just to let you know, I mean, I made the object here in California, and at the end I couldn't show the object in Philadelphia because it was more expensive to ship it there than to make another one. It would have been cheaper to actually make another one in Philadelphia than the one that we made here. So the piece ended up. I mean, right now that piece is actually on display at the Petersen Museum, which is a car museum, in an exhibition that has to do with art related to low riders. So, again, the things are very relative because if I would ship that object as a car and just put it on a flatbed, it wouldn't be actually that expensive. I mean, I could put it there and drive it there. But once it becomes art and it has to be insured and it's valued, and then it becomes, you know, to ship a ton of art as opposed to a scissor lift, it becomes really expensive.
Right. So at the moment you're working on a show. I mean, just to finish talking about that, and do you want to say anything more about what you're working on or what?
Well, I mean, right now, I'm working on this show, as I mentioned. I mean, it's a service show. It will open in Mexico City, and then it'll come to the San Diego Museum of Contemporary Art, I suppose it will stop also in Monterrey, and we're actually looking, if possible, I would love if there would be a venue in the East Coast, or even in Texas. But we're trying. I mean, I guess we are trying to talk to the El Barrio Museum in New York, but nothing is guaranteed. And but anyway, I'm working on that show, and then in the meantime here, you know, starting to there's some projects that we're researching. For example, there's this material that I want to work with, which is this pigment that produces light. If you throw electricity through it, it actually lights up. It's a new material, and we're trying to we're learning how to.
That sounds fascinating. And who makes that material? That sounds fascinating.
Yeah,
if you run electricity through it, it lights up, you said?
Yes, you throw electricity. I mean, it's fascinating because we think of painting as this, you know, material to represent things, like, you know, like, okay, you use it and then you paint something. And modern art thought of painting differently. Like, modern art thought that painting didn't need to represent anything, but needed to be interesting, like an interesting material. But a lot of materials that we use, a lot of painting, the way we use it right now, is because it acts or does something. Like, you know, we, for example, like, let's say, certain military aircraft is painted so it's not the radars don't perceive the I don't know the airplanes or some other. I know that there's painting that is being developed right now that actually transforms carbon dioxide into oxygen, so it's supposed to be good for the environment. So there's a lot of these materials that are being used, or for example, satellites that are painted in order to reflect radiation. So I'm trying to figure out how art is, we could use these materials in ways that the pieces are not just in modernist terms, like they are what they are, like they are concrete art, but also it's art that you have to interact with, or that you have to. In order to create meaning, we have to do something with it, right? So I'm working on all those materials and these ideas, and let's see how far we can push the envelope.
Well, I wish you great, success with that. And let me ask you this question before we go, which is the one I always ask at the end. What are you reading now? It could be off topic or anything at all.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm reading, it's kind of funny. I mean, I read, on one hand, I'm a teacher, so I'm reading a lot of, for example, right now in my hands I have this book that I'm reading, which is a book about photography, the photography reader, and it has all these texts. But I'm just looking here at my desktop, I can also see that I have these books that were written by some friends of mine. I have here a book by a friend of mine, this writer writes in Mexico City. Her name is Mariana Elizondo. I have another book of my friend Gustavo Markovich, who also is writing a couple of new books. Yeah, and those are the things that I guess that I'm reading. Yeah.
Well, Ruben, thanks so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure talking to you, and good luck with your work.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot, man.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.